scary basement. Each week, me and my friend Roxy are drawn inexplicably and supernaturally to this basement, wherein lurks every scary thing that has ever been. And that includes a headless horseman, a chainsaw-wielding man with a cloth bag over his head, a big alien, and a Beetlejuice who just scored a date with the cute barista at his coffee shop and is therefore kind of feeling himself. My name is Mikey McCaller.
I'm Roxy Polk, and I guess I'm happy for that Beetlejuice scoring that date.
It's the problem with Beetlejuice is you can't, he's already kind of feeling himself, so if he's even more, like, confident and sassy, it can be a headache.
Yeah, he's a little insufferable, but, like, I'm happy for him still, but he can, like, keep it to himself in that corner over there.
Beetlejuice keeps, is like, totally...
texting and reading his texts out really loud to, like, try and make us jealous about how they're going to meet up and how cute she thinks he is.
I don't know if this is a universal experience, Roxy, but it strikes me as Beetlejuice to the rest of the monsters here in the scary basement is like that friend you have who's just like, well, I'll snort an Altoid if you'll like me more. Like, you know what I mean? That like overeager guy who wants so bad to be in the group.
Ugh. Yeah.
And you hate it when he gets those victories.
Yeah, he doesn't really have that many kinds of, like, powers and stuff. It's been a long time since I've seen Beetlejuice, but I don't remember him being able to do anything except for just be kind of a gross guy.
He's a gross guy.
And, like, be a ghost who haunts, I guess, right? A ghoul? What is a Beetlejuice?
Unclear. Ill-defined.
Anyway, he's not, like, some sort of powerful demon.
Thank Christ. Roxy, let's start out, as we always do, with the scariest thing that we saw this week. What went down in your life outside the scary basement that spooked you down to your bones?
The thing that spooked me this week, Mikey, is a website. You know what that website is?
What website?
Stamps.com.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's scary.
This fucking website is a subscription service. I did not know this. Uh-huh. I have been signed up for literal years. Paying them, hemorrhaging like $18 a month for years. Like when I was in abject poverty, having to pay student loans, all this other shit, because I didn't realize it. I thought I just had an account there. And then whenever I used it, they would get like a cut when I was paying for postage or something. Uh-huh. So it wasn't until they emailed me this week about how they're raising their fees $2 more for some fucking reason that I was like, what? I've been paying you at all? And, like, normally I'm really good about keeping track of that stuff. If something's like, oh, here's a free service for a month and you have to pay, I'm like, uh-huh. I keep track of that. But this, I didn't even realize that it was paid at all when I signed up years and years ago, which is, like, dumb on my part. I couldn't believe this. I had to go look at my bank account and, like, search stamps.com, and it was like, yeah, reoccurring payment for years. Mikey,
Roxy, I'm so upset. I'm sorry for laughing. That sucks.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Stamps.com is the funniest place to have accidentally been spending too much money.
Right? Hundreds of dollars for this stupid fucking thing. I only use for, like, Christmas and birthdays for folks. I didn't even use it for my business.
It's very... Like, at least, you forget about Netflix, but you still every once in a while get to, like, watch The Witcher. Like, this had no value for you. You were just pumping money into a website that advertises on podcasts.
Truly.
That's a disaster.
That's stupid. Man, myself, I hate stamps.com, never using them again. Everybody else, check your subscriptions. You don't know how much money you're hemorrhaging from whatever weird places on the internet. I feel like I need to do an entire scrubbing of my accounts and see what else I'm signed up for that I didn't consciously know I was signed up for.
You've got to now. You might be signed up for a HelloFresh and are just letting the meals decay outside on your front step.
Yeah, what a travesty that would be. I was wondering why all those birds and raccoons kept showing up at our place, and you know what? Maybe that's why.
Could do
it. Well,
what
about you? What's going on with you this week, Mikey? What is upsetting to you?
The scariest thing that I saw this week, Roxy... Taylor Swift's anti-hero music video.
Okay.
Couple of things truly terrifying about. First of all, this song is a jam. It's a great song. It's where this meme is coming from. This, hello, it's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. It's a great song. The music video contains almost all of my specific fears. In the music video, we see Taylor Swift being a toxic person who is being abandoned by her loved ones for not being a good person. That's terrifying. Okay. She also, at one point, becomes a giant.
Oh, so, I know how much you hate those. I've got a fear of giants. Yeah, that's not
and
good.
We see her interacting with an evil clone of hers who is teaching her that people are going to betray her, so it's better to betray her first. I have a big fear of that clone situation where, like, another me shows up and is like, no, I'm the real Mikey. No, I'm the real Mikey. Shoot him. Shoot him. I don't like that feeling. And
so it's not like the inner voice telling you that everybody is going to leave you someday. It's a literal clone coming out to try and swap places with you.
Yeah. Listen, I'm afraid of both. Okay. I've got both. I think both is very scary to me. And yeah, to watch this video where Taylor Swift is hitting both my emotional fears of being abandoned by my loved ones and my tangible fears where at the end, a giant Taylor Swift like marches up to a house and grabs the bottle of wine that little Taylor Swift starts drinking from and sips it herself. Haunting.
But what if you are the giant Mikey? You yourself are giant now. How does that work for you in terms of that fear factor?
I think it's honestly the same fear that Taylor Swift is poking at here. She says, sometimes I feel like everybody's a sexy baby and I'm the giant monster on the hill. It's like, you can't, if you're that big and lumbering around, you can't hug your loved ones. You can't really be loved by somebody if you're history's greatest man, right? That's why Andre the Giant died alone.
Did he? I have no idea.
Sure, I have no idea if he had love in his life. I hope he did.
It would definitely change your dynamics, like that you could still love each other, but it would be from a distance. It is no longer the same thing that you once had. So either way, it's still warped, if it even exists at all. So yeah, that's horrifying. And I'll have to watch a Taylor Swift music video for maybe the first time in my life. I don't think I've ever seen a single music video she's done before.
Ugh, I love her. She speaks to my heart. Somebody who doesn't speak to my heart, who instead speaks to my soul. And again, not in a metaphorical way, in a literally, he whispers trying to conjure it out of me and I've got to slap him away. Get out of here. It's the Demon Bot. Wife.
Demon Bot.
Here he is sliding up.
Sliding? Did you see the Tokyo Drift he just did?
Ooh. Mikey and Roxy, this week you were assigned the 2015 film The Vavage. Damn it, this new speech processor still won't say it right. The Witch. There. Anyway, did you watch the movie?
I did, in fact, watch it, Roxy. Did you watch The Witch?
I did watch it. And also, are you supposed to call it Vitch? Vivitch? Vitch. It's like two V's, not a W. I don't know how you say this movie. Do you know? Is it
just
Witch?
I have just been calling it The Witch because that's what it's like listed at is on IMDb and everything. I do take responsibility for initially calling it the Vavavitch.
I mean,
which is certainly
I feel like that's not inaccurate based on literally the way it's spelled, right?
You may keep your souls if you cease this Seinfeldian banter at once.
Were we really doing a Seinfeld bit, Mikey?
It was kind of a like, what's the deal with the spelling of the witch? You're calling it the witch? I'm calling it the witch.
Is that
you
a
can't
dig?
Call it the witch? I'm calling it the witch.
Is that a dig or a compliment coming from Demon Bot? I don't know how to take
it. He's notoriously a huge Seinfeld fan, Demon Bot.
Okay, so that's a compliment then, yeah. I think. Okay, I'll take it.
Roxy, for anybody who hasn't seen the Vavavitch, what do you say we give a quick plot recap, just in case they're listening up at that cellar door?
Let's do it. Let's go.
All right. The movie opens in the 1630s within a New England courthouse. Here we meet William, a man of the Lord who left Old England for no other reason than to dispense the gospel of the Lord. In fact, William stands by his convictions so firmly, his religious convictions specifically, that even the Puritans are like, dude, you gotta get out of here. So they banish him from the plantation. It's not clear as to what exactly he did, but he was so much more godly than them. They banished him. William takes his wife and five, yes, five children, out into the wilderness so they can live their godly ways in peace.
Yeah, man, we don't even know why. It's just vaguely the Puritans were like, you're too much for us, dude. They give him like an out, too. They're like, hey, you can like stop doing this and not be exiled.
And he's like, no, I love the Lord too much.
Yeah. Anyway, one of those five children is Thomason, the oldest, who is one day tasked with watching after the youngest, Sam, who is still an infant. When Thomason is playing peekaboo with a baby near the edge of the woods, she covers her eyes and opens them to find Sam is gone. We then find out he was taken by the witch, a frightening old nude woman who mashes this baby, this actual baby, into paste and then covers herself with the mess.
The children's mother, Catherine, is devastated to have lost her baby son. So, in an effort to improve her mood, William takes his son Caleb, the second oldest boy, out into the woods so they can hunt. There, he tells Caleb, funny story, I sold your mother's prized silver cup for hunting supplies. But he swears Caleb to secrecy. William then finds and takes a shot at a rabbit that is positively emanating evil energy, only for the gun to misfire and hurt his eye a little bit.
It's pretty funny. Also, yeah, that's like the evilest rabbit I've ever seen. Jackrabbits do look very strange, just normally, if you're looking at them, especially from the front.
Interesting.
But
I've
yeah.
never looked a rabbit in the eye, and maybe this movie makes
most
me feel like maybe
most rabbits
are
cute. Most rabbits are cute, but there's something about jackrabbits specifically, like the way their eyes and bone structure is, it just makes it look like they're bugging out. It's very freaky. Anyway, when William and Caleb return, they find the middle two children, twins Mercy and Jonas, chasing around the family goat, calling it Black Phillip. Catherine chastises William for leaving without a word and then demands Thomason, who Catherine obviously hates now that she has lost baby Sam, take her father's clothes and wash them down by the creek.
As Thomason scrubs her father's cloak, Caleb comes down to the water and sneaks a peek at his sister's cleavage. Right then, Mercy and Jonas traipse on down to the river, with Mercy pretending to be the Witch of the Woods. But after she hurls a barb at Thomason, reminding her that, remember, Mom hates you, it's Thomason who then claims to be the witch, telling Mercy she longs to eat her flesh. It's kind of played as like a big sister messing around with a little sister, but she goes kind of far. She makes
yeah, it goes a little long. And then also, like, Puritans joking about witches can never be good. I feel like that's just a thing you don't joke about when you were a Puritan unless
that's
you want to be burned. That night at dinner, Mercy is proven right when Catherine notices the silver cup is missing and assumes shitty old Thomason is the one who lost it because she hates her, remember? Never forget that she hates her. William says nothing to the contrary, letting her take the blame. That night, the kids stay up late and listen to their parents talk. Besides worrying that the family is about to starve to death, Catherine wants to send Thomason away to serve another family, presumably for money? Did families pay to have a girl around to serve them in Puritan times? Yeah, I couldn't tell if it was marrying her off or making her a maid or something.
Yeah, or a butler.
I guess so. Yeah, she could wear a coat and tails.
Hoping to keep Thomason from having to leave, Caleb sets off early in the morning for the woods so he can check a trap. Thomason catches him, however, and demands to come along. The two siblings venture off only for Caleb to spy that evil, evil rabbit and give chase. Venturing deep into the woods, Caleb comes across not only the family dog's dead body, but the witch's hut. A sexy, sexy witch then saunters out, all sultry-like, and kisses Caleb before she can grab his head with her old withered witch hand. Wow, a lot going on here.
Now that Caleb's missing too, Catherine is really hating Thomason now. As her mother scolds her for bringing that sweet baby boy Caleb into the woods, totally all her fault, William finally steps up to the plate to tell Catherine about the cup and the fact that he took the boy into the woods in the first place after that was a no-no territory. This softens Catherine to Thomason a little, and in an attempt to push her advantage, Thomason offers to go out and tend to the goats, despite the rain. And it's while she's outside tending to this chore that Thomason finds Caleb, all nude and jabbering incoherently.
The family tries to care for Caleb, treating him like he's sick. Here, Catherine finally admits to William she wishes she was back in England and leads William to promise that he will return to the plantation at dawn, hat in hand, to ask for help from a doctor. Meanwhile, Mercy and Jonas let Thomason know that Black Phillip is going around saying that, hey, rumor has it, Thomason really is a witch, and she's actually the one who made Caleb sick. Think about it.
When Caleb barfs up an entire apple, it's clear this boy has no earthly illness. The family gather around him to pray, but Mercy and Jonas say they can't remember their prayers. And guess what? They blame Thomason for witching the words out of their brains. And Catherine's like, oh yeah, I hate Thomason. I hate the devil. This all tracks. That's when Caleb wakes up and says to the skies, my lord, my love, take me to thy lap. And then he dies.
Now William thinks Thomason is a witch too, but he first takes her outside to tell her, hey, any pact you made with the devil, you can reverse it. And it's here when Thomason finally stands up to her father, telling him it's his fault they're in this situation, that he can't hunt, he can't farm, he can't even stand up for his kid like a man, when he steals a silver cup. The only thing William is good for is chopping wood.
It's all he loves, chopping wood so much.
A lot of chopping wood in this movie. Very sexy.
Yeah, he does it shirtless first time. This is also the moment when Thomason puts together that Black Phillip is almost for sure the devil, and Mercy and Jonas are the ones who have indeed signed his dark book. What else can William do besides throw his three surviving children in the goat barn and board it up?
That night, William admits to the Lord our God that he is a man of pride, and prays that his family might be spared. Meanwhile, Catherine has a dream where Caleb and Samuel come back, and they promise they can see her more often if she'll just sign their book. That's how the devil catches you. He has you sign the book. Like he's an usher at a funeral. Make sure to sign my guest book, please. The family will find it comforting.
The signature's so binding.
Catherine, of course, obsessed.
Apparently.
Catherine accepts. And then she breastfeeds baby Samuel. Except it's not Samuel. It's a crow all pecking at her breast. Finally, Mercy, Jonas, and Thomason wake up in the goat barn to find that the old naked the witch is there with them in the barn, cackling her damn the witch head off.
She's having a great time. The moment when she turns to look at them, I know it's supposed to be scary, but I was laughing so hard. It was very good.
Oh, I was scared. But I was also laughing too.
Yeah. Next morning, William finds the barn door blasted open, the twins missing, and Black Phillip on the loose, along with two dead goats and a unconscious Thomason nearby. The clearly evil goat gores the man and rams him into a pile of chopped wood, which kills him. Catherine, her breast still bleeding from the crow, comes outside and just knows this is all Thomason's fault. She accuses her daughter of trying to seduce her father and brother before trying to choke her to death. Wow, okay, what? Thomason has no choice but to grab a nearby scythe and kill her mother.
It's pronounced scythe.
Oh, of course.
Now, finally alone, no family to hold her back. That is not how Thomason feels, I don't think. Thomason goes to Black Phillip and asks him to talk to her like he talks to the twins. The goat then turns into a man all dressed in black who asks if Thomason would like to see the world to live deliciously. And of course she does. Who wouldn't? So Thomason signs his book, strips naked, and wanders into the woods where the rest of the witches, yes, there is more than one the witch, and they all worship around a campfire. There Thomason sees the witches all start to hover into the air and then finds that she's flying too. Wow, now she truly has become the witch. And that's the movie The Witch.
It's The Witch from 2015.
Roxy, how are you feeling about this movie?
So I want to start off by saying I think this is a very good movie, but like, man, it is just an exercise in misery until like the last 5 minutes of the movie. It was hard for me to get through, especially a second time, because I watched it initially back like around the time when it came out. So the second watch through, there's a lot of stuff I forgot, but plenty of things I remember, like the oppressive vibe of this movie, which is what it's supposed to be doing. It's giving me the effect it's supposed to give. And yeah, it's also just like very dark and dreary, again, on purpose. Sometimes a little too dark, but that's because they're lighting it by candlelight, which is like what they would have had access to at the time. So it makes it more authentic in that way. So I would appreciate them doing that as opposed to just having like studio lighting. But yeah, it was kind of hard to get through. I watched it on Discord with folks, and that made it a little bit better. We had to chase it with like a more upbeat movie afterwards. even though, like I said, the ending to this movie is kind of cathartic in a very good way, a very freeing sort of way. But man, is it intense. What do you think, Mikey?
I saw it when it first came out too in 2015. I remember seeing this movie in the movie theaters.
Oh, okay.
And had that same sense memory coming into it, that it was kind of like not a lot happens and it's kind of drab and sad and upsetting. I had so much fun with this movie.
It was so fun and funny.
It was in this second time where I was like, it's so fucked up. Like it was the kind of like, it's so fucked up the way her parents are treating her that it was funny to me. Like,
it keeps getting more and more exaggerated too. It's like, yes. How can they keep doing this? And then they keep doing it and it keeps getting worse.
Well, specifically the way the mom treats Thomason, the main character, it's like the way they treat Jerry on Parks and Recreation. Like, they just hate her and they're just like, fuck this kid. It's like, it's comically overdone how much they hate her. And kind of with good reason. I think this movie, something that I really liked about it is that it's very much about like, these children are paying for the sins of their parents. Mormons, right?
Yes, yeah, and just about a lot of comments on organized religion where folks will pick and choose what to follow. Mm-hmm. Patriarchy is heavily involved here. And yeah, the pride of her father deciding that it's okay for him to ruin his entire family just because he's an asshole and thinks he's right.
That's what like was so funny to me about the very beginning of this movie. It's like we see the movie opens with these shots of the kids looking at their father giving this testimony in the courthouse saying like, did we not come here to spread the gospel? Are we not all about the gospel? And so it's these children watching this happen, and then they are taken to the forest. We see them just ride into the tree line, and then when they find their little clearing, they get on their knees and pray to it, and we just get this ominous shot of the woods.
And it's so, like, dank and uninviting looking and everything. And they're like, hell yeah, we're going to settle here. Praise this horrible area we've chosen to live in.
But so then, like, when the baby disappears, it's just like, we brought our children to the most dangerous place and something bad happened to our baby. Like
immediately.
Whether there's a The Witch or not.
I didn't remember this happening so fast, like the first 10 minutes the baby gets snatched. And yes, it sets the tone for the movie to be like, this is a movie where an infant gets snatched and ground up and pasted onto a naked witch woman. Get ready.
Not a lot of movies have a the death of a baby as like the inciting incident.
Yeah.
You really want to work up to a baby death. This movie's just like, no, that's what happens. But it's so funny to blame that child for losing the baby when you brought her to the edge of the most evil forest.
Mm-hmm.
They've got their blinders on, right? They're like, we have taken our child into the woods, but that's where it stops. And then whenever bad things happen, they all blame Thomason. And it's very funny to me. This poor child is just like working her way through it. And can't, there's nothing she can do.
And it's mostly the mom teaching the other twin, like teaching the twins that it's okay to do that, like even before they sign the devil's book or whatever, which we still don't know exactly when that is. But like at the end, too, she like calls her a slut and tells her that like she was bewitching. The younger brother, who is like the second oldest kid, he's like looking at her boobs. That's not her fault. That's not her problem. She doesn't even notice he's doing it. Like, the one time when she notices him staring, she just thinks that he's looking at her because he wants to say something and doesn't know how to say it. So she, like, very sweetly is like, what's wrong? Like, here, come tell me all about it and stuff. She's not doing anything, but it's her mother's weird perception and maybe, like, fear and envy about her own daughter who is, like, coming into her prime as a woman and, like, punishing her for it. And this weird puritanical thing where, like, yeah, everybody's born in sin. What a great way to start your life. Everybody is a nightmare.
I think that's what I like so much about this movie, because you're exactly right. All of that stuff is in there. Like, this movie is almost just, like, presenting a bunch of images, and you can kind of take whatever theme most resonates to you, because there's a ton of, like, parents being threatened by a child coming up and becoming their own person. There's a ton of patriarchy. There's a ton of slut shaming, right? This idea that, like, it is in some way Thomason's fault that Caleb is checking her out.
Yeah, she's just existing. She's just being a woman existing.
Exactly.
And, like, a teen also. And, like, her mom wants to immediately ship her out, which in times like that, I assume that probably happens when all kids come to a certain age to a degree. And also they're just starving on the farm. So in a way, I was like, oh, maybe she's sort of looking out for her because she knows how much of a nightmare it is to be trapped on this farm. So she's like, just send her somewhere else where she won't die. But that's not really her motivation. I think it probably would have been what would have happened. I mean, she would have still been trapped in that system and wouldn't be able to become the witch and fly and live deliciously and all that.
And that's a problem. speaking of becoming the witch, Roxy, what do you think is the difference between Thomason, who does sign the book, and everybody else? I think the father is the only one that we are certain does not sign the book. How come she's the only one who gets to be in the ring of witches at the end, do you think?
That's a good question. So, like, with Caleb, it's unclear. It kind of just seemed like the witch was preying on him. I don't know if he signed the book, especially, like, in his final moments when he's shouting about seeing Jesus. So either he's being given a hallucination, or because there is supernatural things going on, maybe he didn't sign the book, so he's able to pass into heaven, maybe. Or he's seeing Lucifer and saying it's that, so he is going to hell. Who knows? The twins, we are just given to assume that they have signed it because of Black Phillip and everything that happens thereafter. But, like, we don't see what happens to them. The twins just, like, disappear, and we don't know. So I don't know if, like, they go somewhere else or what, or if, I guess all of the witches you see around the campfire are, like, women. They're adult women, as far as we can tell. And so I don't think, and I think they would have shown it if the twins were there. So if they signed the book, I don't know what happened to them. The mom, I guess, does, right? Because she is tempted so she can see her children again, like, after she's basically broken mentally. So, yeah, she did. But I don't know, maybe it's like the devil understood her and her struggles and was like, she's stronger than them and she's more independent, or like, I can use her. Whereas these other guys are so like warped that like trying to get them to do what I want to do won't work. I don't know. And I mean, probably the biggest thing you can point to is, like, from a writerly standpoint, it's her story. It's about her. It's about, like, her womanhood being able to just go and exist now. Like, you're free to exist. Don't worry about it anymore. You can live deliciously now and fly in the forest. You're the witch.
So good.
So I think it's kind of, like, a freeing moment for her in that way. Whereas, like, I don't know. She didn't try to take advantage of anyone. She didn't try to punish anyone. She was, like, the kindest, most good-natured character in the whole movie. So maybe it's kind of like, I don't know, a reward? Maybe that's not the right word to say. But, like, she gets to live because she was able to prove herself as a person, maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I was kind of putting it together, like, the mother could have, in theory, become the witch, right? She hits all the criteria.
Yeah.
She succumbed to it. But the thing that she ended up getting destroyed by was, like, feeling a sense of competition.
Okay.
So she wasn't able to live deliciously, which is the best phrase that this movie has used. This idea of just, like, having a hedonistic lifestyle where you get to experience all of life's joys. Yeah, you live deliciously. She wasn't able to because she was so concerned with, like, this rival that she had seen as... because she was seeing her daughter as a person becoming unto herself. But then I was thinking about the kids a lot and why, you know, Caleb and the twins and certainly Baby Sam were not able to join this. And for me, the key was this scene that we get right before Caleb takes off into the woods to eventually meet the Sexy the Witch. They're having this conversation where Thomasin is reminding him of how back in old England, they had glass windows. And he was like, no, we didn't. And she's like, no, we totally did. Don't you remember when, like, the dog would lay in the sun and father would talk about it? And Caleb was like, I guess I remember that, but I don't remember the windows.
Yeah, because he was so much younger.
There's something about growing older to a certain age that, like, you've experienced enough of the world that you know what it means to live deliciously. Like, I was thinking about what it would be like for, like, the baby. Like, what could the devil offer the baby? The baby doesn't know. The baby's just like, I don't know, my mom's boob, which I have. Like, it doesn't have a concept of wanting more.
Yeah.
I would argue the twins don't have a concept of wanting more. There's nothing they could be that could be traded for their service. They were just like infants. They were essentially infants.
Well, when he gives her a very simplistic offer at first, he's like, do you want to have the taste of butter? And then he moves up when she doesn't say anything. He's like, what about a pretty dress? And then moves up to whatever the next thing is. So he keeps going and going until he gives her something that is, like, actually possibly worth, like, trading your soul for.
That's a good call. That's a good call. Yeah.
If you gave the twins that offer, they'd probably say, yeah, I want to know the taste of butter. It's been a while. So it was probably, like, really easy to get them. And then after that, he's like, well, I gave you what you wanted. Now we can kill you. Fair game.
That's true. That could be it. But also, I just feel like this idea that, like, if these twins have no memory beyond, like, the life they have right now, then, like, did they ever wear a pretty dress? You know, if they were born in even just the plantations, like maybe they never had butter. Maybe they never had a pretty dress. So it's just like he doesn't know what to offer her. The fact that Thomason is old enough and has this thing that she wants makes her easy to manipulate. And I think this is why Caleb kind of goes halfway. Why he is sick for a while, like his soul is kind of in torment, because it's very clear. It was so funny to me when he checked out his sister's chest, when it's like, oh my God, now this kid's like going through puberty also. Doesn't this family have enough to deal with? Now we got a horny little boy on our hands. They clearly had something they could tempt him with, but we'd also seen him talk to his dad about how horrified he was about the concept of original sin and how much he doesn't want to go to hell. So if he's knows two things at once, that he is both simultaneously wanting to bang and wanting to be loved by the Lord, that's his sickness. It's his sickness that is like battling out, and it just like burns out inside of him and he just dies. And it's why it's so funny. His specific calling out to Jesus as he's dying is, Jesus, my Lord, Christ, let me lay in your lap. Like, he wants to fuck Jesus.
That's why I was like, is he seeing the devil then? Or like, the mom also describes it in a way where she sounds very horny for Jesus, where she's like, I was enraptured, or like whatever word choice she used made it sound more salacious than just being like this heavenly being that you think is cool and worship. It was more like she's horny for this, especially when like she then compared it to be like, It was more powerful than even the most dedicated husband's love could ever be.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And says that specifically to her husband. And he's just like, okay. So it's very much like she has this idol that she kind of worshipped and projected all of these feelings onto, just the way her son did, I guess, in this instance, too. Which, yeah, that's something for a psychologist to unpack for sure.
But that's what I guess I mean when I say, like, there's so much going on here that you can be like, oh, is this about a lust for Christ? Like, it does kind of paint their zealotry in, like, a more absurdist light. Like,
for sure.
We, as non-religious people, I think, look at the way William and Catherine think about religion and see it as ridiculous. But, like, it's hard to argue it's ridiculous when it's talking about wanting to bang the Lord.
Yeah, and I think one of the things about puritanical society in general is they left England because they were too over the top and too zealotous for even the very entrenched religions over there that are so, you know, like they were burning witches and shit over there way before they were doing it in Salem. So like they were pretty over the top anyway. So when an over the top religion is then like, you're too over the top even for us. And they're like, well, fuck you. We'll go to the New World then and make our own cult over there. So then they go over there. And then you've got this subsect of this family, and particularly like the father, who is like, no, I love Jesus even more than you guys. And you guys just don't get it. And we don't know exactly what he did that was so bad that they were like, dude, you gotta like stop that or leave. And he was like, okay, I'll leave.
Yeah.
So
I kind of don't care what he did. I just like it for me. It's enough to know that like, he's pretty religious.
Yes, this guy, exactly. I think you don't need
to
know.
He's a go to church on Sunday and Thursday kind of guy.
I'm curious to know how bad it is. But like, yes, I think for the purposes of the story, you don't need to know. It's fine. When someone like that is so like completely entrenched and just kind of like bends things to be like convenient for him when he wants it to be and stuff like that, like, oh, it's got this one line. The scripture has this one line, so I can bend it to mean this other thing that I want because it's what I need in this situation. Like, as an excuse to send his family out into the middle of nowhere and doom them to this. And I remember when I was watching it on this other rewatch, I was like, I wonder if there's a way to reason any of this out as being like a natural thing and not the devil. Which, when the baby dies and you see the witch in the first 10 minutes, you kind of, you kind of can't. But it also just made me think too, like, their corn is dying. What if that's just like, they pick the worst place that has like toxic land or something? Like, there's just something in the land that makes it so, hey, maybe don't start crops here. Start them a mile over there, guys. But like, they don't try that. It's what we end up with is they just have like this desolate field with nothing in it. Mm-hmm. And also they're growing like corn. I don't know if they know how to properly even prepare it at this point in time in like, what, 1630 mm-hmm. to like get the most nutrition out of it. So like they pick the most unnutritious crop that they probably knew how to make as well, which is just like, man.
That's very funny.
You really don't know how to farm, do you, my guy?
I loved this man's, William, the father's, like, atonement at the end. When he, like, Thomason, like, peeks through the cracks towards the end when she's locked in the goat barn. And she sees him just saying, like, all right, I was prideful. I would eat your dirt, Lord, if you would let my family go. Obviously, you can't let me go. And he just throws dirt in his mouth. It's like a very... I don't know, for somebody like me who just like see whenever he see whenever I see somebody like behaving abhorrently, I always want to like argue them out of it. I'm like, don't you understand? You shouldn't be doing this much meth on the subway. And they're not like they don't know that what they're doing is bananas. But to me, it's just like it does feel so freeing when somebody who is acting bananas is just like, I'm so sorry, I was acting bananas.
Yeah, there is something very, again, cathartic about that sort of payoff. This is going to be a kind of tangentially related, so go with me for a minute here, but I've been watching yet again more Kitchen Nightmares reruns, like while I'm working and stuff in the background.
Sure.
And like so many of those episodes just start with like, you call Gordon Ramsay in here to fix your shop and you are convinced there is nothing wrong with your shop when he shows up. I do not understand what's wrong with you. Every single time is a fight where he has to be like, I tasted your food and it's bad. And then the people will boldface be like, no, my food's the best food around. It's a 10 out of 10. And every episode is an exercise in someone like that who will not listen to reason and then eventually comes around, at least with the editing, which I think is very cathartic. And I think this is a similar situation here where we finally see him own up to what he has done and how he's put his family through this. But it takes him so long. So many things have to go devastatingly wrong. He loses two children and is like, three of my children are possessed by the devil before he is finally, finally willing to be like, yeah, that was my bad. Take me instead, I guess.
Yeah. You're right. This is a pretty great episode of Kitchen Nightmares.
Yeah, I know, right? It's a little darker than I'm used to, but hey.
It does kind of get into what I think is my last big point about this that I really saw this movie as. Like, I would almost argue that this movie is a sequel to a Western. And I mean that in that, like, we get a lot of, like, Western shots, especially early on as they are, you know, taking the caravan out into the woods and conquering the wilderness is a huge theme of Westerns. But the reason I say it's a sequel is because so many of those old Westerns are about madness, are about the type of person who can conquer the wilderness, who can build a society, are too crazy to live in that society once it's built. And that's why Westerns always end with the cowboy riding off into the sunset. Yeah. It is this metaphor for like, you have done your thing, now you don't get to live amongst us. You are too much for us, and so you have to go. And so what's so interesting like to me...
Your life is in the ephemeral of establishing this thing, not exactly living in it. So go on to the next place, help them. And it's just kind of like that. That's your life. You weren't the settling down sort. And so don't worry about it. You don't have to. Just go on to the next thing, I guess.
See, I would argue that it's even one notch higher than that, because it's not even that like you're not the settling down type. It's that like you did brutal things here to build this community. And we thank you for it. Like, the idea of going somewhere new, what the Puritans did, you know, coming to a new world, carving out new a land that is not meant to be lived on and making it livable, making the land livable is a task almost beyond a man. And the type of man who can do it is therefore not a man. Like, he is more monster than man. And that's what a lot of Westerns start hinting at, like, I think about the John Wayne movie, The Searchers, where it's about John Wayne and his little buddy, like, searching for this young girl who's abducted by Native Americans, and they spend 2 years, like, looking for her, and it's beyond the point that a reasonable person would stop looking for them, and they do eventually find her. She, like, lives amongst the Native Americans, and I don't remember what happens then, but this idea that, like, when everybody else would stop, when eventually somebody, a regular human being, would say, like, we've gone too far, we just can't turn this land into somewhere a man can live, the cowboy, the star of the Old West movies, is like, no, we will go even further. So it's like, to see this man and his ability to conquer the land is also tied up in his ability to preach the gospel. Mm-hmm. When even the Puritans are like, you have gone too far, they expel him. The movie essentially begins with him riding off into the sunset. But what's so horrifying about this, what makes it a horror movie as opposed to like an interesting Western, is that he brings his family with him. Like, yeah. He brings this group of victims. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I don't know that I've ever seen in a Western before. It's this question of like, what if this man of the Wild West had a family that he rode off into the sunset with? What if he brought them along? And the answer is they're viciously murdered by the elements. It's very scary. But like, I even like this idea that what I think was especially interesting to me about seeing this character reach his breaking point and atone is that we never, ever see men of the West reach that point where they become something different. They move on and they a lot of times forget their life, but like, we never see them realize, like, my instinct was wrong. It's kind of not a trope.
So, you know,
and to see it is like mind blowing, kind of.
Yeah. I haven't seen enough Westerns to know, but I kind of feel like the Western heroes just don't have character arcs. You know, it's not about them learning something, it's about them doing something. And maybe a supporting character would learn something, but that archetypical, like, cowboy character, he's just what he is the whole time. And that's supposed to be kind of the appeal, is that he's a cool guy that people can look to get stuff done to a degree. Mm-hmm. And then, it's also like they're treating him as disposable in a way. I feel like this is just also, I keep wanting to say, like, oh, it's like Metal Gear. Oh, it's like Dragon Age Inquisition. Where, like, people are going to rely on you and want your services, and you are going to be indispensable for that amount of time. But then when people get what they want, then you are suddenly disposable and you don't belong. And so, you don't get to reap the benefits of this thing that you have done for it's other people that do.
Yeah. The Joker says it to Batman the Dark Knight. He's like, they need you now, but when they're done, they'll cast you out like a leper.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they will. It's true. If you defeat all crime, then what's the point for having Batman around anymore? You know?
Yeah.
What's the point for having Big Boss around?
And that's exactly what these Puritans do, right? Like, if their whole thing is like, we got to go dispense the gospel, who do you want on your team besides William, the man who will do nothing but dispense the gospel?
Like,
he is a religious superhero to the Puritans, and then they get what they want. They have conquered whatever their plantation was and made it religious enough that they're like, okay, now you gotta go. You're
Instead of just
I'm fascinated by it.
Living with him being the weirdo down the street. It's fine. Just let him be the weirdo down the street. But I think, like you said, since his entire family is involved, it's not just him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's truly horrifying.
It becomes a nightmare. Yeah. And I think making, like, I would argue that, like, the protagonist of this movie is William. But the hero of this movie is Thomasin, and that, like, she's watching it, and she's like, that's why she becomes the Nev Campbell of this movie, because these things are happening to her, and she happens to be, like, she's a survivor. She's good at, like, dealing with these things. But it's very scary in a way that, like, if this movie is kind of focused on him, then I think if you, like, keep it about, like, him hunting down the witch, like, that's, like, there's a very clear way to, with not that many changes, to just make this a traditional Western.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he actually he never tries to hunt down the witch. He doesn't even believe it exists until, like, the end, basically, either. Mm-hmm. But, that's a really interesting point. I like this kind of analogy you've pulled between that and Westerns. It was something I didn't even think about, but, like, I totally agree with you. Spot on.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. Anything else about the witch that you wanted to talk about?
I don't think so. I think that's pretty much it. I would like to know what happened to the twins. That's the one hanging plot point that I was like, what did happen? But it's also not important. They're just...
They were used to start that fire at the end.
Oh, okay. You know what? That makes a lot of sense.
kindling.
I would like to know also, like, all of the other witches, are they in the same wood? Is it something kind of, like, outside of time and space? Because I was thinking, like, well, Thomason wants to go out and travel and see the world, too, right? I hope she's not just stuck in the woods with all of these ladies. Like, they are stuck in the woods. Hopefully she can go out and do something. We'll see in the sequel, yeah. The Vivitch 2.
Yeah, this is a globe-trotting adventure. It's the Vivitch 2 Uncharted Lost Legacy. She's hopping around the continent, stealing babies for Black Phillip. Roxy, we got to give this movie a rating. So on a scale from 1 to 5 thumbs, remember, we can give more than 2 thumbs up to a movie because we have a big box of hands. Mm-hmm. How many thumbs up would you give the Vivitch?
So I gave it a 3.5 because it had a theme, set out to do what it wanted to do, and it did it well. It's just, like, too miserable for me. I would never want to rewatch this again. 2 times was more than enough for me. But I do think it's a good movie, and if you have not seen it yet, I don't want my rating to, like, deter you. You should see it for yourself, for sure. But, yeah, so that's why it's a 3 out of 5 for me, just because, like, I don't personally enjoy it, even though I do think it is objectively good.
Yeah, I get that. There are a lot of movies that you can tell, like, this is great. I am not having a fun time.
Yeah, yeah. Which, I mean, not every piece of art or media should make you want to feel good, I guess, you know? There's another movie, Grave of the Fireflies, which I could never rewatch again because I will just be a crying mess because of how good and how tragic it is. And I know it's objectively very good, but yeah, holy shit, I can never watch that again. Some movies are just like that, and The Witch is one of those.
Yeah. As has been made clear, loved this movie. I had so much fun with it. Because it's so weird. I had that same, like, sense memory of it. I was just like, yeah, this is a great movie, but it's not enjoyable. I don't know. I watched it, and I'm giving it 4.5 thumbs up.
Oh, it's damn.
Close,
okay.
It's close to perfect for me. It's just, like, so full of, like, surprising little twists. We didn't talk about a ton of them, but there's just, like, moments where a chicken will give birth to a cracked, bloody baby chicken, like with little to no eggshell around it. And yeah. Thomason just finds it and moves on with her day.
Yeah, she just looks at it, is horrified, and that's it.
I love a movie that's packed with, like, weird little details. And I kind of like that these details all sit on their own. There's not a lot of... It almost feels like this movie has so many perspectives, it has no perspective. Like, it's like, it's saying so many different things about so many different issues, and then has all these little, like, again, like, the fact that she barely reacts to that chicken, it's like the movie isn't really giving you a point of view on the chicken. It's just, like, you're left to sit with these unsettling images and ideas do with them what you want.
Have one little comment to say that maybe she knew that if she reacts to it and shows it to her parents or anybody, they'll be like, you're a witch. You did that. Instead of just you discovering it. Just like when she was milking the goat and then instead of milk, blood came out. And then she was like, don't tell the parents that this happened. This is bad. So I could see that maybe being a reason. But I think also there's plenty of other examples of what you were talking about with them. Well, just like having
almost make the argument like, I think that's why this movie is so cool, because, like, you saw it and you were like, what I suspect is one of the most deeply unsettling parts of this movie to you is that, like, the parents don't believe her, right? Yeah. Like, that's what's kind of most upsetting to is that, like, the person who is most supposed to love and care about you doesn't believe you. Mm-hmm. And that's upsetting. To me, the most upsetting part is that Caleb died. The little boy died. And we had this really sad scene where he's just like, am I going to go to hell if I die? And he's just like, wish I could give you comfort, buddy. And it's brutal, right? And that
speaks to
me. That kid's,
like, what, 10 or something?
Yeah.
Great.
It's very
sad.
Thanks,
dude.
But that speaks to me about, like, how tragic it is for somebody who has not lived a life, right? He doesn't even remember the real good things in his life, this Windows from England. He didn't even get to live a life before he died. And he was just a scared, innocent little child who died. And so then, therefore, when I think about the first thing I thought about with the bird's egg that, like, to us was clearly so fucked up, it was just like, maybe Thomason just doesn't know enough about the world. You know, she's lived in the fucking forest and in a Puritan colony and a little bit in England. Mm-hmm. But, like, she just doesn't know enough about, like, chickens that maybe sometimes they're born that way. So maybe she's just like, huh, that's weird. Because she just doesn't know enough about the world.
Could, like, be that too.
Whatever you are most afraid about in this movie, like, you could theoretically projected onto any of these images. And I just think that's cool. I think it's cool to make a movie that could be so specific, but so, like, personal at the same time. Like, so personal to an audience, right? You can take from this what you want.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about this before. I think all art is that way, especially, like, you know, when you're trying to communicate a specific theme in doing that, you're going to touch on other stuff, too. Like, even if you were trying to be as clear as possible, the viewer's going to take away other things for it, things that communicate to them or things that they noticed or something like that.
Yeah, which is neat. I just feel like this movie created a really great space for me to roam around in ideas. And I was just giddy watching it. I couldn't believe how much I loved it. A weird thing to say, but like the moment they took that baby, I was like, oh, we're in it now, huh? Like I was.
Like I said, I didn't remember that happening so quickly because, that is the inciting incident that happened so quickly. And it's just, she's just playing peekaboo. And it's like maybe the fourth time she is covering her eyes and opening her eyes is when it disappears. And there's like no tracks, no nothing. It's so sudden and abrupt. You're like, wait a minute, what? That actually just happened? Okay. And then it cuts to whatever the witch is doing. Then it cuts right back to the family. And you're like, why are we seeing this? I didn't even remember seeing that scene at all. I don't know if I blocked it out of my memory, but it just like lingers uncomfortably long on like this naked baby and like a gnarled hand like touching it and stuff before eventually then getting the knife and then, like, this weird, awkward shot from behind where she is, like, grinding it up, and you just see, like, her naked butt and her scraggly hair, and it's in the darkness in this void, and you're like, what is happening?
That was my favorite detail of that, is, like, her scraggly hair is, like, weirdly, like, touching her butt and kind of, like, stuck to it, so it's, like, kind of looping back around on itself, and I was just like, that's well observed. If you were sitting on your long The Witch hair, and you got up to mash up a baby, like, that would stick to you. In a way that, like, if you're, like, a filmmaker going, like, yeah, well, she's just mashing up a baby, so she's going to be standing. We don't have to think. It's just, like, it feels lived in. That was The Witch.
If you're going to mash up a baby, that's how you mash up a baby, of course.
Very I've said lived it for in. Years. Roxy, do you have a question for me?
I do.
You, I guess you're going to answer it, too.
Yeah, let's both answer it. So the devil gives you a book to sign, to do things and whatever. So he's a lot of different things. So my question is to you, Mikey, if you were the devil, what kind of signs would you leave? Would you leave a dead chicken egg? Would you have a spooky jackrabbit just appearing and disappearing? Would you have Black Phillip talk to the children? What would you do?
So, okay, I once planned to do something like this.
Oh, really? Like as a prank or something?
Kind of. Okay. So do you remember, like, you remember the show Kenan and Kel?
Yeah.
This is, I think, the clearest example, but it was like, it was kind of this trend in the 90s, I guess, where it's like, you're kind of like, your identity is based on what sort of foods you like. Like Kel from Kenan and Kel loved orange soda. And it's like, so if you saw a bottle of orange soda, you're like, oh, Kel Mitchell's in town, you know?
I forgot like about a lot of shows until had, you mentioned it. Yep, that's right. Yeah,
I think a lot of shows had that kind of idea that there was a character who was sort of defined by like, oh, this guy's always eating tacos.
I mean, they even made like a spinoff movie. The Good Burger movie is all like a character that they made, right? That is like obsessed with this.
Oh, yeah.
Like burger sauce that he made or something, too. And that like sounds that right. just defines his entire life. So even with the character, other characters they made, very food themed.
So when I was in junior high, I felt like I had to have some sort of food brands as my identity.
Oh,
and the three that I picked were
for your life Pepsi. Sponsorship. Okay, Pepsi sponsored Mikey's middle school life, and
it was Pepsi, Taco Bell, and Junior Mints. Were okay, the three things that like I loved so much that people kind of knew about me. They're like, oh yeah, Mikey loves those things. Uh-huh. And so between 7th and 8th grade. Or I went to one school for 7th grade, and then in 8th grade, I got homeschooled, which is fucked up.
What? But, how come I never knew this? This is the first time I'm hearing of this, Mikey.
Because I don't talk about it.
It's, yeah, I guess
homeschooling
not.
Is a crime.
I'm but sorry. It sounds rough.
The plan was, if I was going to go visit, I would have my friends, Kenny and Tony, take, like, an empty can of Pepsi and leave it on the table. And so people would come in and be like, can of Pepsi, that's weird. And then they'd find a Taco Bell wrapper and they'd be like, is someone coming? And then they'd find a crumpled up box of Junior Mints sitting on the table of the next class. They'd be like, okay, Mikey is here. We are getting signs that Mikey is here. And then for the last class, I'd be like, surprise. We never did this. Also, I don't think people thought enough about me to like know those were my things.
I mean, that's kind of how it is in middle school, right? It's
exactly.
It's a hard time.
They all think about me as much as I think about me.
Nobody had a fucking good time in middle school. If somebody out there claims they had a good time in middle school, I feel like they're a liar. Nobody had a good middle school, in my opinion.
But if I was the devil, that's what I would leave. I would leave cans of Pepsi, Taco Bell, Junior Mints, and people would know. I'm on the way.
He's coming. The devil is here. You have seen the signs of the Junior Mints.
Roxy, if you were the devil, what would you leave for people to know you're on the way?
I went a little more traditional and less personal, I guess, thinking like, if I had devil powers, what would be a cool one? Mm-hmm. And I just kind of thought about gradually starting off with something small and then kind of leading into something large. Like, I think whispering, making people doubt themselves and their hearing to be wait, did I just hear something telling me to sign their devil book? No, it couldn't have been. There's nobody here. So they're already paranoid and on edge from the get-go by starting off with that whispering. Then I work up to a plague of birds where they're eating their crops and sitting around just like unnaturally staring at them. You just walk outside, there's like 300 crows just all over the place looking at you. And you're like, well, that's not right. This seems
that
cursed.
Is very scary. You're exactly right. I think you're right.
Also, like, birds are cute. I'd like to hang out with a bunch of birds if I was the devil. And then after that, like, if the people see all that and they don't move out of there, then I'm just going to have a storm come and destroy all their shit. Because, like, there you go. They'll either be left with nothing, so they'll be like, oh, okay, I'll sign your book because I literally have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Or they will have been smart enough to take a hint and leave. So I don't feel...
So you're just trying to get people out of the house so you can claim that land for yourself.
Mostly just, like, if they're that dumb to stick around after all that, then, yeah, you should sign my book. But if you're smart enough to preserve your own life and get out of there, then A+, good for you. You saw the signs and you survived to live another day. So I'd like to be a little fair, give them a chance to, like, escape if they
see, Roxy, think about this it. Is why you're never going to be the devil. You just don't have that killer instinct that you need to be a devil.
I guess so.
Roxy, last week we made a bet.
Mm-hmm.
We made a bet about the Vovich. We asked each other what the total number of goats to appear in the movie would be. I said there would be one goat. How many did you say?
I said three.
Roxy, you are right on the... You hit the nail on the head.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Three goats.
Three goats.
One of them was the devil, but I think we did see three goats tangibly. So
yeah,
three goats is going to do it. That means the total bet score sits at Roxy with 43 points, Ooh-hoo. Mikey with 33 points, Ty with 4. You have a 10-point lead on me right now, Roxy.
Damn, dude. It's arbitrary, but hey, try and catch up.
It's arbitrary, but step the fuck up, dude. Speaking of stepping the fuck up, look who's stepping up out of that dark pit. Why, it's the demon bot.
Ooh.
Congratulations, you successfully reviewed The Witch. Ha. First time. Anyway, for next week, you must review The Fly from 1986. IMDb is down right now. That's the Jeff Goldblum one, right?
Is that the Jeff Goldblum one, Roxy?
Why is he asking us? Shouldn't he know if it is? I'm pretty sure it is. There's only two of The Flies, and I don't think Jeff Goldblum was alive for whatever the black and white one was.
Okay.
What was it black?
Well,
I actually don't know. I don't know anything about The Fly, Mikey.
Here's the thing I've never even realized. There's no saying that the demon bot has watched these movies. He might just be picking them.
Oh my god, I never even thought about that. That's a good point.
Yeah. Interesting.
I guess that's probably better because then if he had watched them and if they scared him, a demon robot butler, enough, then they'd probably scare us. But since he's not doing his homework and just picking from a list, I guess... maybe it's partially our boon.
That is how we end up with movies like Tucker and Dale versus Evil. He's like, this will scare them.
Yeah. It's on the movie list that says horror, right?
So we're going to watch The Fly for next week. We got to make a bet about it.
Yeah. Oh, Okay, Mikey, how about we do the total number of times a word fly singular is said? How about that?
Okay, I like that. Yeah, that makes sense. Because if, like, say, for instance, in this movie, The Fly, they run into, like, a hotshot pilot and somebody goes, like, how you doing there, fly boy? Like, that wouldn't count, right? That's what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, great. Okay, yeah, I will say the word fly will be said 15 times. I think it's going to be a hot topic of conversation.
Okay, I'm going to say 9 times. Because, I don't know, why not? I do like the idea that there's going to be a lot of hotshot pilots in this movie that they're going to call Flyboy, though. I'm looking forward to that.
I do hope The Fly takes place in the Top Gun cinematic universe.
It better.
That'd be tight. Roxy, we've talked about a lot of scary things this week, including The Witch, parents just not listening to you, and, you know, goats. goats can be scary. Let's end by talking about something that's making us happy. What's making you happy this week?
The thing that's making me happy this week is I have finally gotten back into doing art streams on Twitch more regularly. Oh. It's something that fell kind of by the wayside. I was dealing with, like, a lot of burnout and stuff. And getting back into it, it's really fun. Like, I was doing a Final Fantasy 14, like, merch design. And I was like, what the fuck is this armor? And, like, someone from chat literally jumped in and they were like, oh, hey, I just took a screenshot of my character wearing this armor, so here you go. I was like, great, thanks. Oh. That's awesome. So it's just super fun getting into doing art again and, like, having people be excited about seeing me do that. You know, like, that's a big thing to just want to be able to, like, share the stuff you're working on with people and having them care even a little bit about it. So that's been super fun for me, and I am very glad to be getting back into it and hoping to do more in the future more regularly.
That is fun. That's great.
What about you, Mikey? What's making you happy this week?
This week, I am being made happy by the television show Vanderpump Rules.
Again? I think this was your pick a while back, too. Are they do a new thing?
That makes sense.
Or just, that, like, it's evergreen. I would believe either way with you and how much you love this show.
The answer, Roxy, is both.
Okay.
Because Vanderpump Rules, the first 2 seasons of this show, are the best reality TV shows I've ever watched. There are things that happen in the first 2 seasons of this show that are so silly and so shocking that I just couldn't believe them. And this is seasons 1 and 2. They are on season 10 right now.
Holy shit. And God, reality shows are
insane. Season 9, I didn't even watch. Season 9 was just, like, kind of rough. All the they they got rid of the two funniest and worst cast members, which I understand.
So I guess, but, okay, real quick, just for people who don't know what this show is, and for me having a vague memory of you talking about it, it's like a restaurant or something run by a family. Is that the setup?
Close. It is. It's one of the Real Housewives from Beverly Hills. It's spinoff, Lisa Vanderpump.
Okay.
She owns a restaurant, and it's all of the waiters and waitresses, and bartenders specifically, who work at this restaurant called Sir in West Hollywood. And they're all dating each other. They're all cheating on each other. They're all bad people.
Okay.
And the first 2 seasons coming of the back. Show are just, like, the peak of reality television.
Damn.
It's
and since this has been going on for 10 years, was it, like, in 2013 is around the time when it came out? So is it kind of like a little time capsule?
That sounds about right. I don't remember exactly when. They might do multiple seasons a year.
Okay.
Especially because of what just happened.
Oh, damn.
Is making it clear they are flexible with their schedule.
Oh, no.
Roxy.
I'm bracing myself,
season 10 was already kind of like a comeback season. Right, one of the original couples from the very beginning of the show, in maybe season 4 or 5, they got married. In season 10, they're getting a divorce, and it's adding a new, exciting element of drama to the show.
Okay, because, you said you didn't even see the season before this because you had, like, your interest had dropped and it had been lagging, so this is peak drama by the sounds of it.
So it's coming back.
Okay.
But we just found out, in real life, a couple that's been together since season 2 of the show, a 10-year relationship.
Oh, well, something like that exists on this show? Okay.
Yes. They were, for all intents and purposes, the healthiest couple on the show. They just broke up because the guy, Tom Sandoval, is cheating with one of the newer cast members who came season 5 or 6 named Raquel. And it's
oh my God.
funny. It is so funny that those two specifically would get together because they're in the same friend group, but they're kind of two different generations of the group. So it's like you don't really think of those two ever having spent time together or interacting.
Yeah.
It is like, listen, it's real people, real people's lives. It's devastating for Ariana, the girl who was cheated on in this 10-year relationship. It is unbelievable that that would happen and that they would be found out, that they would be caught. And then they just announced season 10 is being extended because they are like, this is such a huge thing. This is such a huge story. This is kind of like the sort of gossip that's like transcending into the mainstream. They're like, we're going to film more episodes for season 10 because we have to cover this.
Yeah, I mean, that tracks, and they know what good TV is, I guess. They're just going to milk that for all it's worth.
Absolutely. Man. I'm so excited.
That fucking sucks for her. I wish she had found out that he's the cheating bastard type a lot earlier. That sucks that she wasted 10 years of her life with some loser like this.
I want to be clear. They got together in season three. Uh-huh. Season two, he was with another character who was later booted from the show. That he definitely cheated on a lot.
Okay, so signs were there, she just ignored it, I see. Okay.
Probably cheated with his previous girlfriend, with the girl he ended up in the 10-year
relationship. Oh, no. Okay, so she did the thing where she's like, I'm different. I'm the one that's different. He might have cheated with me on this other person, but I'm the exception. Damn girl, no. Right. So yeah, they're all terrible, like you said.
Yeah.
Okay.
It really is the funniest combination of these two of characters who could have cheated with each other. Just because of like the history. Oh, it's great. Yeah. It's great. It's a great show.
That's almost a little poetic in the horrible way, but.
It really is. No, I would say Vanderpump Rules is my most poetic show that I watch.
I think the only way I want to experience this show is by you giving me updates like this, or like Mikey, create a YouTube channel, be one of those YouTubers who like cover these when they come out, like interspersed with clips and shit, and then send it to me. That's how I want to watch this show. Hopefully.
That's exactly how I want to watch anime.
We can do that. We want to do a trade. We'll do a tradesy.
This is great. This is the plan. Roxy, it's time now for haunted plugs. First of all, make sure you follow Scary Basement on Twitter @scary_basement and follow it on Instagram @scarybasementpod. Roxy, where can people find you on the internet?
I am on Twitter as Red Mage Roxy, and I'm on Twitch as Red Mage Roxy, where I stream 3 days a week, every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday.
Hell yeah. And I, Mikey McCaller, am on Twitter @secretblimp and on Twitch @twitch.tv/secretblimp. Also, make sure you're giving the Scary Basement podcast 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Also, please leave us a review. That really helps us out. And another way you can show your support is by checking out the Patreon for our podcast network, SuperNPC. Sign up at patreon.com/supernpcradio, and you can get bonus episodes of Scary Basement covering horror video games, as well as episodes of SuperNPC that Mikey and I will be hosting. In addition, you will have access to the years and years of content from the rest of the video game loving folks over at SuperNPC.
Finally, don't forget to share and scare this podcast with all your friends. And as always, do not sign any contracts offered to you by Demon Robot.
See you next week.